He paused and scratched his head with his pen, as if to recall something he'd forgotten. "And," he stuttered, "something has turned up at the church. Over the last few months, we've had reports of moving lights at night. Youths, probably, come down from the caravan park, all drinking and playing ghosts and larking around, you know." She turned fully and looked him directly in the face. "He's so young, almost too young to keep the law, never mind enforce it," she thought to herself. "Is there a connection between that and..." She paused, hesitated, sighing at the release of the stress over the past hours, not least from the interviews and cameras that had poked at her privacy, as well as asking her the same questions again and again about what she had discovered, until there were no more answers any different than the one she repeatedly gave. You know the smuggling history along this coastline? The shipwrecks, the beach and the flooded church?" Her voice trailed off. The mystery of it all sounded too real, too familiar somehow, almost like a predictable television show after 9.
"I don't know, but we do have a missing person, an abandoned car, and a wreck of bones dragged here from who knows where."
He paused himself and then added,
"And when?"
Behind the two of them, the waves had lessened in their intensity. The roar and rage of the shingle had shifted to a hiss and rattle. The crowd of people had thinned. The tide line was mostly of broken wood, seaweed, and fragments of casings and caskets, and long, thin bends of binding metal, all twisted and rusted as they pointed wildly, madly at shattered bottles, brown glass, and thin arms of a myriad of twigs and branches that had piled in heaps from the retreating tide.
"How'd you know? How'd you do it?" "Ark, I've often thought about it. How do you trace a missing person who you know has abandoned his life, his time, and probably drowned in the sea?" he asked.
"Time will tell," she mumbled, almost to herself.